This land is yours, land. This land is mine, land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest, the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhat with the People Speak radio show. When the people speak, we make a difference. I'm here tonight with my guest co-host, Charlie Giuliani, and we are also being hosted by BBS Radio. Don is working in the background with us. Please feel free to join us out on Pal Talk by going to paltalk.com, downloading the software, and creating a nickname. That way, you too can join us in our virtual auditorium here on Pal Talk. It's a great place to gather. It's one of the best chat rooms on the planet, I think. We're having a lot of fun. And tonight we have a fantastic guest, somebody that I know a lot of people in the Pal Talk auditorium, and I know as well as the American people, especially in light of everything that's happened with the 9/11 and the events in Iran. People are really concerned about what's happening. Our guest tonight is William Rodriguez. He is considered the hero of 9/11. We'll be back with William and our interview in just a couple of minutes after our public service announcements. Just hold on and we'll be right back.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Charlie Giuliani, your co-host tonight. And again, our special guest is William Rodriguez. He's the last person who was pulled out alive out of the WTC wreckage. He's personally responsible for rescuing 15 people from the North Tower on 9/11. He's come a long way since then, having been honored with the three highest awards given by the Hispanic American community in the U.S. He's traveled worldwide, been a speaker in Asia, South America, the U.K., the Middle East. He's quite a busy man these days. Tell us, Mr. Rodriguez, I'm curious, apparently initially you didn't suspect 9/11 as being an inside job. Is that correct? This is something that came to you later?
Charlie, number one, it was a shock for me because in the very beginning I was just paraded practically all over the nation as a photo opportunity for the top politicians. And I was being practically groomed to run for office, and I didn't know what was going on. I was just going along with the whole thing. And once I started with a group of Guidos to ask for an investigation to be created, is when we realized that the whole thing was blunder every step of the way, because they didn't want an investigation. They wanted to put the people that they wanted there. Remember, they wanted to have Henry Kissinger as the head of the commission, and we went up in arms, and then we said, no, we don't want Henry Kissinger, because he sent the wrong message to the world, because Henry Kissinger is considered a war criminal in many countries. And
right.
Some of those countries help us as victims, you know, sending down donations and so on. So
very
we didn't want to have
reputation.
The wrong thing. Go ahead.
Right.
And go ahead.
You came to this conclusion on your own, pretty much? You just
Well, in the very beginning, something wasn't matching because, number one, one of the things was that when I was pulled from the rubble, I told my story how I heard explosions and things like that in the building. And my story was presented for several days without any kind of editing because it made great historical news and it made great wonderful heroism news. But at the same time, I noticed that there was a strange differentiation because in all over Latin America, my story continued being told completely without any editing. And here, within days, they started to cut out different key factors of what my experience was. And I figured it was done because I didn't understand at that time, but I thought it was because of content of the news, because you have to convey the story within a minute or two on television,
right,
and you needed to cut everything out. So I figured, you know, that's the right way to do it. So, you know, that's the way it is. But within a couple of months, I realized, wow, what, you know, why is over here this way, and all over the world is totally different. It didn't make any sense. But still, I was hoping that, you know, my fears and my worries weren't correct. And we have to remember that at that time, I just went through a national shock like everybody else. And as a last survivor, it was just like, you know, too much of a shakeup for me because I just lost 200 friends. I was emotionally wiped out. So I have to deal with the emotional backdraft that left me. And on top of that, dealing with creating the first family group, which I did, was the family, how you call it, the Hispanic victims group, and dealing with the fears and the suffering of so many other families. So I start putting all the pain and suffering of so many people on top of my shoulders that I didn't have the amount of time or the ability to put all the pieces together during that time because it was an emotional time.
Oh, sure.
And so, you know, it was a process, and that process started to develop and started to unravel as we asked for a formal investigation. And that's when we realized, oh my God, something is wrong. They're not telling us the truth. We wanted to have a family member to represent us inside the commission, and they didn't allow it. They didn't want it, and they never accepted it. And they said one of the reasons they said was that they couldn't clear a person to represent us because that person was going to have access to national security documents, etc., which it was a lot of baloney because, remember, at the World Trade Center, we lost people that were CEOs, people that were lawyers, people that were stockbrokers, that have family members that could have represented very well, who were even judges. And so, you know, not to be able to clear these people was kind of laughable to all of us. And but they got away with it. They got away
now,
with it. And go ahead.
Did they ask you to come before the 9/11 Commission, or did you request that?
No, remember, the commission was created because our effort, I went to Congress with all these people to get this.
Oh, you
created.
Were one of the ones pushing for it.
Yes, correct.
Oh, I didn't even, okay.
And after this created, I went to almost every single meeting in Washington and here in New York, and I asked, you know, you need to hear my story. And they left me for the end, and they put me behind closed doors. My testimony was heard behind closed doors. It, like everybody else was actually doing a televised open hearing, mine was done behind closed doors, something that did not make sense to me. You say, how these people can take me to the White House and wind me and dine me, and all of a sudden my story has to be heard in secret. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went along with it, thinking that it was the right thing, or they didn't want to do it an emotional event because, you know, it was very emotional for the victims. But at the same time, well, we heard about the chief of the police, the chief of the EMS, and the chief of the fire department, and that was very emotional itself. So I said, you know, that doesn't make any sense again. And what a surprise that, you know, even though we all along the way we receive negative and after negative after negative. We didn't get any positive from many of the questions that we placed. We created a family steering committee, and these family members were putting questions constantly towards the commission. And from 168 questions, we only got answered to 27 questions. So
amazingly,
you know,
this never got on the media.
Well, we constantly send press releases, and the media picked up some of the items that we were doing, but we realized that they were not covering the story correctly. They were concentrating on the findings of the commission as they went along.
Right.
And the stupidity
William,
was.
William, you actually saved the life of a gentleman that was a victim of one of the explosions that happened in the basement of the towers.
That is
was
correct. And he's alive. He survived with 33% of his body totally burned.
Has he been investigated and has he
no.
been allowed to speak before
no,
the commission?
No, 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 no. I made available more than 22 people to be called before the commission, and they never called. Neither one of them.
Naturally. Do you know Louis Cascioli? He's one of the firemen. He said the same thing. That
yes, correct. And Louis, here's one of the persons that was there, one of the first responders that experienced the event. He spoke about his views openly on the HBO special about 9/11. And even though he said that his words after that has been taken out of context, but basically, he talks about, you know, what he experienced that day, that he heard boom, 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 an explosion, like the building was set up to detonate and come down like a controlled demolition. And but he wasn't the only one. He's a hero, but he wasn't the only one. There were so many people that came out with the same allegation on the news during that time.
Right.
And they have disappeared from the news, from the media. They have never been called again. They have never been investigated at all. And as a matter of fact, I did a show on the week before September the 11th that was recorded for September 11th. It was on the highest rated television show in Spanish. We call it the Spanish Oprah. It's called the Cristina Show. And there on the Cristina Show, who reaches 35 million people, I had the opportunity and the pleasure to meet one of the sisters of one of the firemen. And she told me off camera, listen, what you have said goes with the story of one of the firemen that I spoke to, who said that he saw explosive on one of the floors. I said, what? I never heard about that. That one of the firemen said that. I said, well, he told me personally. And, you know, this is one of the ladies that I'm going to interview myself to try to get all this information, because these people never had the opportunity to come out and publicly talk about that.
Were you there when Cascioli walked out?
I'm sorry?
Were you there when Cascioli walked out? He was so disgusted, he said that they weren't listening to what he was saying about bombs going off, that he walked out and said this is a scam.
Yes, I was there, of course, of course.
Yeah, amazing.
And do you remain in contact, William, with the 22 people that you presented?
No, I haven't kept contact with them, because I got so, during that time, I got so frustrated that the whole thing was a sham, that I just, like, practically threw the book out on the air. And most of these people have moved out. They have changed their telephone numbers, and they have gone incognito. Problem has been that, but I have some key several people, and these people are reachable. I mean, it's not like they have disappeared from the map. But you know, these people that they should have been contacted during that time. And remember, most of these key people has moved out from New York because of well, you know, New York has become a police state after 9/11, and the economy really didn't recover here, so people have moved along because of
the whole country,
effect.
Pretty much.
And you know, my surprise was that after they came out with the final report, Charlie, I was so angry, because you have 576 pages of a novel there.
Yeah.
That, you know, I looked through every page to find these people, and I never found not even one of them. I didn't find my name anywhere.
Total whitewash.
And your name did not appear either?
No, it doesn't appear. Not even my allegations.
Cassie,
they don't talk about the allegations.
Yeah.
They do a vague, very vague allegation, but not on the report, but on the papers that were submitted to the commission. These are the supporting papers that, you know, it's not on the report itself.
Tell me
they said that there was fire on the 21st floor and on the 55th floor. And, you know, huge fires, which I experienced the one on the 21st floor. But, you know, they never explained why there were fire there.
Were you there for the Sybil Edmonds testimony? And if so, are you at liberty to talk about some of the things she had discussed?
No, I was not at the Sybil Edmonds testimony. I was actually out of the country. And I've been in contact with Sybil, and I really think that she had, after that, a really bad rap by the government. And she has been put a gag law.
Gag order.
And she has been practically tied up verbally to express what she has gone through. And the good thing is that even though they put a gag law on it, she went around and created a whistleblower association. That,
you know, it's amazing. You've been honored at the White House 5 times and you have a gag order on you. I mean, how insane and ridiculous is that?
Well, you know, the government itself did not put the gag order on me. They actually have constrained my ability to speak freely over here. The funny thing is that, and I think you both agree, has been my mission and how I've been able to go all over the world to speak about what really happened. And that has created such a wave of information that the media over here have no other option than to start covering the 9/11 movement. Because, you know, it's so much out there. You go to Europe and everybody knows it's a sham. They have so much information. For example, I went to France and I did a presentation and a guy came out and said, Mr. Rodriguez, you don't get it. I said, why? He said, because, you know, here we have all that we receive, we get it through CNN. And people take CNN as the last word. But at the same time, we have envoys or correspondents that give us the same story with our, with the reality of what's happening. So we're getting the information from our own people, our own correspondents. It's totally different from what we get on CNN. So, you know, we have a more unbiased and balanced information gathering possibility than you have in the United States. So what you're getting is just, you know, fed practically as the truth. And I was
but
like,
you're right,
oh.
Though, in spite of all that, the word is still getting out, especially through the internet. And but, you know, the dam has burst and they can't stop it. They can't continue.
They cannot stop it. They cannot stop it. For the incredible, I just came back last week from Japan. Now, Japan has the first 9/11 investigation conference ever. And it was a huge success. I'll be honest with you. I went over there and I expected to be just, you know, a bunch of people, maybe 100 or so. And I was surprised that they sold out the event. It was standing room only. People were sitting on the floor all over, even on the outside of the conference hall. And it was through every presentation that we did. And their hunger to get this information, because they were sold the official story, and that's why they even went to war in Iraq, and that's what they said on the Q&A.
Right.
And
you know,
they
we
were so
break.
Angry. Go ahead.
We're going to break in a few minutes. I was just wondering if you could just recap real quickly. Of course, you might get some additional questions in the second half. We're going to take questions on this. But if you could just summarize what you had heard and seen the morning of 9/11. In fact, even going back before that,
yes.
What was going on the 34th floor, I think it was, right?
Yeah. Well, number one, let me summarize one thing and clarify something. I saved 15 people single-handedly because I went twice inside the building. And on the third time, I had the only master key that opened all the doors in the building. I was followed by the fire department as I opened the doors and let people escape, and with that key I was able to save hundreds of people, and that's why the recognition was done, because the ability to be able to open all those doors on 9/11, in the morning of 9/11, I was located on the basement, on the sub-level one. The building had six sub-levels of basements. And while I was talking on with the supervisor, we hear boom, an explosion so hard that pushes upwards. And when something pushes upwards, it's evident that something has blown up under you. And the first thing that I said, it was a generator that blew up on the mechanical room, which was on the B2 level. Now, the B2 level, they have all the generators and pumps for the building. When I went to verbalize it, because everybody was screaming, we hear, bah, the impact all the way on the top of the building, two different events. I mean, completely separated. You know, something on the basement, then the impact of the plane all the way on the top. How do I know it was a plane? Because it was so far away, all the way on the top. And I worked in the building for 20 years. I could tell you the difference of something coming from the bottom or something coming from the top or something coming from the sides. I knew that building like the palm of my hand. I remember that's why I was able to lead the firemen up the stairwells to go to every floor, because I knew that building like nobody else. So as I went up at different floors, doing the rescue efforts, we heard different explosions as we went up. And I remember asking the firemen, what is that? And they told me they may be the gas tanks in the kitchens, which didn't make sense to me because all the kitchens were electrical. Mm-hmm. Now, as I continue going up, the fire department completely, that unit completely collapsed on the corridor, and I continue going up by myself until I get to the 33rd floor. On the 33rd floor, I found a lady shaking on the floor without shoes, and she didn't even know where the exits were. I picked her up, put her on the stairwell. There were people coming down. I told them to please help her to escape. And as I went back into the 33rd floor, I heard something very strange. On the 34th floor, the floor above me, I heard very strange movements of heavy equipment being moved around. Now, this floor was an empty, hollowed-out floor by construction, because the tenant moved out a year before, and they destroyed the whole floor. You know, they scraped everything out. There's no electrical. There's no walls. There's no sheetrock. There's nothing, because that's how the Port Authority make money, to reconstruct the area to the specification of the new tenant. So to hear this kind of stuff being moved around, it scared me. It was the first time, and that should give you a sense of, you know, what the sixth sense tells you not to go to a floor, because it was the first time I felt fear. And that floor, the only way you can get to that floor was through the stairwell, because not even the elevators will open, because it will shut out on the panel. So it was like scratching rollers of those heavy metal dumpsters, that kind of sound.
Did they ever tell you or anyone else to not go on that floor, just to stay away from it? Or?
No. I actually remember I was alone, because they all collapsed on the 27th floor. So I bypassed that floor. That was the only floor that I bypassed, and I did not open for fear that something will happen to me.
Well, on that note, we're gonna go into our prize giveaway segment, William.
Yes.
We are going to be, our prize tonight actually is going to be a DVD, an autographed DVD of William Rodriguez's generous gift from him. And the third, now get ready, this is going to be for the Pal Talk audience, virtual audience only. So it behooves you to go and log in to paltalk.com and join our audience for all these great free giveaways. The third answer is going to be our winner for tonight. So I know that our moderators are ready to find out who's, get your tech fingers ready.
Actually, we're going to give two giveaways. We're going to give a video, and we're going to give a copy of the picture that I give to all the prime ministers that I meet on all these countries.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, thank you.
And this
you
picture
that, folks,
I took the day
too?
Before, the day before 9/11. And it's a picture of the towers, yeah, and it's historical itself.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful. So you heard it here, two gifts, a video and a photograph that William Rodriguez took the day before the towers. The question for this evening is, how many times has William Rodriguez, our guest tonight, been honored at the White House? Now, I did say it to make sure that everybody heard just a few minutes ago. Come on, guys. I'm sure you can do it. Take a wild guess. Obviously, our Pal Talk audiences have been listening to me. All right. I see some numbers going on there now. We got it.
I need to make an apology because Pal Talk have tried many times to contact me, but I've been out of the country at every level that they have called me to set up an interview, and I haven't been able to do that.
Well, the person that probably was trying to contact you most of the time was Charlie right here with you, and I know he's been thrilled to have you here as well as all of us. We've really been looking forward to this, William. You're a hero with us, and keep up the good work. We'll be back in just a moment. We have a public service announcement, and our guest tonight is William Rodriguez, and we will be back in just a moment.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who are forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition.